From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Brown Theater at the Wortham Center in Houston, Texas, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you, Houston. Yeah, it is kind of exciting, isn't it? Hey, I got a question. Does anybody remember money? You know, it was these green pieces of paper. We used it to buy things before the financial collapse reduced us to an economic system based on bartering seashells and mutual grooming behaviors. Anyway, this week, we are devoting our entire show to the theme of money. Who had it, what they did with it, and what people might do to get it. And two members of the great Texas rock band ZZ Top, Dusty Hill and Billy Gibbons, will be here to give us some lessons about living large. First, it's your turn, and it's free to call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi there, this is Jordan Deckenbach from Washington, D.C.
Hey, Jordan. What do you do there in Washington?
I'm an attorney.
Ah.
What a surprise, right?
I see. There are so many of you in Washington. Do you ever move about in great herds?
We do. It's how we prefer to travel.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the show, Jordan. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a humorist and author of the audiobook, It's Just Like I Told You, 25 years of comments and comic pieces available to download near you, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hello, Jordan.
Hey, Tom.
Next, say hello to a comedian whose first CD, I Heart Jokes, is out now, Ms. Paula Poundstone.
Hey, Jordan.
And lastly, a deputy editor and blogger for the Houston Chronicle, Houston's own, Kiri O'Connor.
Hi, Jordan.
Hey there.
Jordan, welcome to the show. Now, as I said, the theme of this week's show is money, and we're going to ask you to play a new game we've invented for the occasion, and we're calling it
Lifestyles of the Rich and Despicable.
All right.
You're a lawyer. You know all over this stuff. You're good.
D.C., we're full of those.
Yeah. Well, never have so few made so much money wrecking the economy as in 2008. We're going to give you clues as to how three financial tycoons were amusing themselves while you and I were fighting the other hobos for that last can of beans. Your job is to guess correctly what they were doing. Do that two times out of three. You'll win Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Let's do it.
Well, we'll start with one of the first companies to collapse causing that crisis. We're talking about the investment bank Bear Stearns. Carl, tell us about their CEO, James Cain.
Well, this tycoon takes his pleasures at the table. He's not eating. He's playing. And after trumping his opponents, he likes to kick back, turn on the blacklight poster, and play a hand or two with a bridge partner named Mary Jane.
Turns out, according to the Wall Street Journal anyway, that Mr. Cain may not have noticed his bank was imploding because he was too busy playing bridge and doing what?
Smoking weed.
You bet. Looking back on it, Bear Stearns never should have done their executive recruiting from the guys selling bootlegs outside a Grateful Dead concert. Before he became a multimillionaire titan of finance, Mr. Cain was a competitive bridge player, and even as his company lost billions of dollars, he still found time to play at tournaments, disappearing for days or weeks at a time during crises. And, the journal said, many people saw the 60-something Cain light up a doobie after a hard day at the table. He denied one specific allegation, but when pressed if he ever indulged, he said, "Whoa, man, you've got a real questiony aura."
You know, the story about him smoking dope is actually kind of reassuring, because when you look at that mess, these people are educated, experienced, and all that, just completely drive this thing into the ground. And it's somehow comforting to think that maybe they were just stoned.
Yeah. It's like
that it wasn't malice, it wasn't greed, it was just pure dope-headedness.
Like buying up all those troubled assets, it was just a form of the financial munchies. Oh, dude, I could eat a whole bag of subprime loans right now. All right, Jordan, that was very good. Now, the next to fall as the economy imploded was the nearly century-old investment bank Merrill Lynch, whose demise as an independent company was overseen by its CEO, one John Thame. Carl, tell us about Mr. Thame.
Well, Peter, he's not the kind of guy to let the collapse of the American financial system get him down. He's got an $80,000 couch made from real unicorn leather. And a Queen Anne chair made from Queen Anne.
Thame became infamous because while his bank was going under, he spent $1.2 million of company money doing what?
Redecorating his office.
Exactly right. Everybody knows, it's a truism in business, you can't destroy one of the significant institutions of Wall Street while sitting behind a déclassé desk. John Thame was the highest paid executive in America. He earned $82 million a year, yet he submitted more than $1 million of receipts for furniture for reimbursement. A few months later, Merrill had been bought by Bank of America and absorbed $20 billion in taxpayer bailout money. To Mr. Thame's credit, he did say he did have a regret about the whole thing. He said, quote, "If I had that to do over again, I'd furnish it in IKEA."
You know, I have a whole theory about the Merrill Lynch problem.
Yeah.
Remember back in the day, they used to be Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner, and Smith?
Mm-hmm.
I think Pierce, Fenner, and Smith were the smart guys.
Yeah, whatever happened to them? All right, Jordan, one more to go. One of the most notorious failed companies of the crisis was AIG, the insurance giant that ended up being bailed out to the tune of $100 billion or more of our money. It ran through CEOs during the crisis like it did taxpayer cash, and Carl is going to tell you about the last of them.
The new CEO of AIG works hard and plays hard. Actually, we're not sure if he works hard. He doesn't care about the S&P 500. He wants SPF 30.
So what was the first bold move Robert Benmosche took after taking over troubled AIG in the summer of 2009?
Took a trip to somewhere warm, I'm guessing the Bahamas?
Well, close enough. He went on vacation immediately. So imagine your team's losing big in the late innings, and you call in your star closer, and he runs out onto the field right past the mound to the concession stand for some nachos. Robert Benmosche offered the excuse that he'd been planning the trip for a while, and sure, the company had just been given billions of dollars in U.S. taxpayer funds, but Carnival Cruises offers an endless chocolate fountain at the dessert buffet. Once he got back from his trip, Benmosche announced that the bonuses that were still being given to AIG executives were, quote, criminal. No, wait, he didn't say that. He said the bonuses were fine. Telling people about them was criminal.
Well, you know, the poor guy, he was CEO of AIG. If you've got that many letters, you're doing something wrong.
That's true.
You should have a word in there somewhere.
Yeah, CEO.
OMG. Carl, how did Jordan do in our quiz?
Well, Jordan is a winner, Peter. He had three correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on his home answering machine.
Well done, Jordan.
Thank
Congratulations.
You.